From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo signs a new anti-gun violence measure into law. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the new legislation. And the federal government says it will not reimburse Newburgh for the cost of PFAS contamination. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo signed a new anti-gun violence measure into law this week at a ceremony attended by survivors of gun violence and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. More from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The measure, approved by the Democratic-led Senate and Assembly earlier this month, permits what's known as an extreme risk protection order. It allows law enforcement, family members, and school officials to go to court to seek the confiscation of the guns in the home of an individual that's determined to be a potential risk to themselves or to others. Cuomo spoke at a ceremony in Manhattan with survivors of gun violence and relatives of victims who died in mass shootings. He says the legislation, also known as the Red Flag Bill, is a sensible provision.
So when the teacher sees there's a problem, or a family member sees there's a problem and believes that a person could be a danger to themselves or others, they can go to a judge and say, "Judge, please do an evaluation." It is common sense. If you believe that was going to happen, why would you sit back and do nothing?
Linda Beagle Schulman is a Long Island native whose son Scott, a teacher, was among 17 killed in the February 14, 2018 Parkland school shooting in Florida.
Parkland would have never happened, and my son would still be alive, if Parkland had the red flag law on February 13, 2018.
Speaker Pelosi, playing off on President Donald Trump's recent declaration of a national emergency over southern border immigration, says the epidemic of gun violence in the nation is dire.
This gun violence issue is a national health epidemic in our country. And Mr. President, if you want to talk about emergencies, this is an emergency.
Pelosi says the Democratic-led House will later this week pass a national version of the extreme risk protection measure, as well as a bill to fund gun violence research through the Centers for Disease Control. It's expected to stall in the Republican-led U.S. Senate. Several other gun control measures were also approved by the New York Senate and Assembly. They include extending the waiting period for background checks for gun purchases to up to 30 days if the initial data search raises questions about the buyer. A measure to outlaw the possession and sale of bump stocks was also approved. The device, which turns a semi-automatic weapon into essentially a machine gun, was used in the October 2017 Las Vegas shooting that killed 58 and injured 851 people. The use of bump stocks is already illegal in New York. A third bill helps fund gun buyback programs. Cuomo's expected to sign the rest of the measures in the coming weeks. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Well, Alan, this week, Governor Andrew Cuomo, standing with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and survivors of gun violence, signed a new anti-gun violence measure into law. The so-called Red Flag Bill would
allow the judge to order guns confiscated from someone deemed a danger to themselves or others.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, we're going in the right direction. What happens when it gets to the Supreme Court of the United States is another whole story. We know those people who are sitting on the court right now, the Republican majority, have been quite quite clear on what they want done with the Second Amendment, and they consider it to be pure. So it makes great sense, of course, to take guns away from people who are going to go and shoot up a bunch of defenseless children and teachers if we can find them. It could be a little bit of a witch hunt. A lot of people have seen analysts and others, and you say, okay, what makes somebody a mental health risk? And that is something that I don't think we've been talking about an awful lot. So, yes, it needs to be done. Yes, it's a good bill. Yes, the Supreme Court will probably find a way to make sure it doesn't happen. It's not good.
Speaking of, we witnessed authorities saying that the New England Patriots owner, Robert Kraft, visited a Florida massage parlor for sex acts. He's charged now with two misdemeanor counts of soliciting prostitution. They say they have video of these acts even. He's pleaded not guilty. The issue that came up on the roundtable panel yesterday, you brought it up, Alan, and it's in New York. A group of New York lawmakers are calling for legalization of prostitution. We're talking about Senators Jessica Ramos, Julia Salazar, and Brad Hoyleman, as well as Richard Gottfried, someone we know well, are working with a group called Decrim New York, which is a coalition to decriminalize, decarcerate, and destigmatize the sex trade in New York City and the state. And, of course, part of this is the human trafficking that goes on.
Well, if prostitution is to be legalized, it will definitely offend some people. You know, it took a long time for marijuana. Now it's going to take a long time for prostitution. But obviously what's good about it is you can assure that the health of sex workers will be monitored and people will have to get licenses and do what they need to do, and that will protect the public. On the other hand, there are those who oppose it and say it's immoral, it shouldn't happen. One of the problems with that is, of course, as Bessie Smith once sang, there's lots of ways to sell it, baby. And the problem in this particular case is, if these women have been brought into this country and forced into sex slavery or prostitution, that's another whole story. That isn't somebody deciding what to do with their own body. And then the question becomes, if you do legalize it, and if people have to go through particular steps in order to become a sex worker, will that in fact stop some of this illegal, terrible things that happen when people are brought in from other countries and forced into this?
The governor finally spoke out on the Amazon deal falling apart and going after the New York State Senate, specifically Mike Gianaris. But as you point out, you don't want to be on the governor's dark side.
David, I like Mike Gianaris very much. I think that the Senate Democrats have made a bad mistake here. I heard from one of them who was quite upset with the interview, who said that all that the governor had to do was say no to Gianaris. Remember, the whole point here was that Andrew Stewart Cousins had put Gianaris forward to sit on this board, which would ultimately decide on the Amazon deal. And, of course, we knew Gianaris was leading the group against the Amazon deal. Now, I like Gianaris a lot. I think he's been a terrific leader, and he helped to rid the Democrats of that awful group of, you know, rogue Democrats who went over and kept the Republicans in power all this time. So he's a real good guy. But the email to me said all he had to do is say no, he wouldn't accept Gianaris on his committee. Then why do you put him forward in the first place except to embarrass him? No, it didn't stand up. It was a ridiculous sort of claim that they were going to make the governor say no to Gianaris and get somebody else. It's inside baseball, but it really, really stunk. And New York is not going to get those jobs. Now, do I believe, and I have always believed, that people like Amazon and their leadership should all pay taxes? Of course they should. And the fact that they're not is not good. Nevertheless, 26,000 jobs in New York. That's a lot of people and a lot of jobs. And while there certainly would have been some displacement and other things, it really goes to the fact that I think a bad decision was made here. As for Amazon, hey, I can hardly blame them.
Well, also this week, Alan, there was an agreement between the mayor and the governor on something called congestion pricing.
Well, the mayor and the governor both know that there is something awful going on in terms of how much traffic there is in New York. It has gone from congestion to moribund. I mean, it really needs work. They've tried in the past to do some things, but it hasn't worked. And in addition, they have a big problem with the subways. They're going to need a load of money in order to correct the subway problem. One of the things that this congestion pricing plan, which means that people who bring their cars below into the 60s and down are going to have to pay, just like you pay with EasyPass. They will be charged for going into that area, and that money theoretically will go for the subways. I think that was the basis for the agreement between de Blasio and Cuomo, both of whom know that the subways are a big political millstone around their necks, and no matter what they try to do here, it really isn't happening. If I'm Cuomo, I think I would be paying an awful lot of attention to this, not only to the airports that he wants to rebuild and all the rest, but the fact that people who have to get around, the New York City subway system, I know this very well, is a marvel. But it was built so many years ago that it's just fallen apart now. You got to fix it up, and it's going to take a sort of a domestic Marshall Plan to make it happen, and they can't figure out where the money is going to come from for all of this. Hey, this is different. This is a real bad crisis. We all have to get together, and that includes the mayor. So, you know, the mayor, his, quote, frenemy, who he is now cooperating with both on the congestion pricing plan and on the subways. People don't care who takes the credit. They just want it fixed.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. U.S. Senator Charles Schumer was in East Greenbush, New York, to announce that the Environmental Protection Agency intends to set a maximum contaminant level for PFAS chemicals. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was there and filed this report.
The New York Democrat spoke before a gathering at the University at Albany's Cancer Research Center in Rensselaer County, which has grappled with water contamination in communities like Hoosick Falls and Petersburg.
Once the EPA declares that this is a carcinogenic substance, establishes a maximum contaminant level, then all sorts of things are triggered in terms of finding ways to deal with this issue and making the people who did wrong pay for it.
PFOA and PFOS have been linked to illnesses like cancer and birth defects. Schumer says the EPA has been dragging its feet when it comes to setting water quality standards and says safe drinking water should be its focus above all other issues. He wants the EPA to adopt an aggressive timeline in establishing MCLs, maximum contaminant levels. Mayor Rob Allen says Hoosick Falls has been on filtered water since mid-2016. Saint-Gobain and Honeywell International share the blame for polluting the village water supply.
In terms of the average resident, we're still monitoring our health, learning more about what the exposure we had means. As a village, we are still working to get what we've spent on the situation from the companies and some form of settlements.
Allen expects DEC's alternate water study report, expected in May or June, will hold some answers the village can apply as long-term solutions in lieu of filtration.
The locality shouldn't have had all the burden here. There should have been a standard. There should have been a federal rule. EPA should have come in and gone after the companies that did this, who were denying and reluctant at the beginning. So I think, you know, the federal government, up to this moment, EPA and others are still to blame.
Allen, a father of four, says the water crisis impacts his life every day.
When I made the decision to step up to run for mayor, it was to sort of help the village that was in a very tough spot. I've had a lot of support of residents. And our goal has simply just been to move things forward so that we can get back to being beautiful Hoosick Falls instead of PFOA-contaminated Hoosick Falls.
2 years ago, Allen told the Times Union that testing showed his children had high levels of PFOA in their blood. His daughter had the highest, 112 parts per billion, which is more than 60 times the national average. In December, the New York State Drinking Water Quality Council recommended a drinking water standard of 10 parts per trillion for PFOA and PFOS. Environmental groups had wanted to see an MCL of 0.3 parts per billion.
The EPA has been a lapdog for industry, not just in PFOA, PFASs, but in everything. And best thing we can do is get a good administrator who is not just listening to the industry. Pruitt did, he's gone. Wheeler's not much better.
You can read the letter Schumer sent to EPA Acting Administrator Andrew Wheeler calling for immediate action at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Meanwhile, the federal government has told Newburgh that it will not reimburse the city for expenses incurred from PFAS contamination emanating from Stewart Air National Guard Base. The interim city manager there says the response is unacceptable. In the meantime, the area around the base is one of eight communities selected for a government PFAS study. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
Interim Newburgh City Manager Joseph Donat says the city had filed a claim under the Federal Tort Claims Act in April 2018 requesting that the federal government pay for the city's expenses and other damages resulting from the PFAS contamination of Newburgh's former water supply, Washington Lake.
Department of Defense and Air Force, I have to say that the city of Newburgh is disappointed in their response. All we want to do is protect our residents and get reimbursed for all the expenses involved in this matter. There's no doubt that Stewart Air National Guard Base is a source of the contamination at Washington Lake, and it is our hope to continue to move forward and supply our residents with a watershed that's cleaned up and suitable for use.
In a letter dated January 29th from Department of the Air Force, the city was advised that its claim for damages was denied.
I anticipate that the city will amend its complaint to incorporate additional claims against the defendants, and we're in the process of assembling that as we speak, and you know, I'm sure that more information will be available in that regard moving forward.
The letter from the Air Force says the city's lawsuit against the federal government was filed in September, thus ending administrative adjudication, resulting in the denial of the claim. PFAS contamination was found in Newburgh's main drinking water source, Washington Lake, in 2016. That August, New York State designated Stewart Air National Guard Base a Superfund site after finding the source of PFAS contamination was the historic use of firefighting foam at the base. Democratic Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney, whose 18th district includes Newburgh, says in a statement, quote, "The city of Newburgh didn't contaminate its own water supply. Its citizens shouldn't have to pay to clean up a mess they didn't make. The federal government contaminated the water, and they have the responsibility to pay for remediation," end quote. On Thursday, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry announced that they have identified eight communities to be part of PFAS exposure assessments. The communities are near current or former military installations, and one of the eight communities included is the area near Stewart Air National Guard Base in Newburgh. In Massachusetts, Hampton County near Barnes Air National Guard Base in Westfield is another of the eight selected. Participants selected randomly in these communities will have their PFAS levels checked via blood and urine samples. Dan Shapley is Riverkeeper's Water Quality Program Director.
So on its face, this sounds good. We've been wanting to see Newburgh get the attention of federal health officials for these kind of health follow-up studies. Unfortunately, it looks like this study is not going to provide residents with what they really want to know, which is what does the exposure mean to my health. It's going to, in some way, shape, or form, tell people that they have been exposed, but fall short of that next step, and that's really what people have been wanting to know.
An ATSDR spokesperson says the exposure assessments are part of a larger multi-pronged approach to better understand and address PFAS exposure across the country, including in the Newburgh area. The larger multi-site health study is intended to learn more about the relationship between PFAS exposure and health outcomes among differing populations, and will use the lessons learned from the exposure assessments. The sites for the multi-site health study are not yet identified.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Northern Border Regional Commission is a federal-state partnership that aids economic development in northern New York and New England. Late last week, Vermont U.S. Senator Patrick Leahy announced that the program is expanding in Vermont, New York, and New Hampshire. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was there and filed this report.
The Northern Border Regional Commission aids economic development in areas that are considered in economic distress across a region that parallels the Northeast Northern Forest. Vermont Agency of Commerce and Community Development Deputy Secretary Ted Brady is Governor Phil Scott's alternate on the commission.
The Northern Border Regional Commission was created as a four-state entity, New York, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine. And it's modeled on the commissions around the country that realize there's a unique federal-state partnership. The state and the feds are co-equals in administering this entity that administers federal dollars to help the people of these communities invest in themselves, recognizing that rural America needs that kind of assistance.
The commission was originally formed in the 2008 Farm Bill. Senator Leahy explains the scope and funding has been expanded with the completion of the 2018 Farm Bill.
True to the commission's name, it only included Vermont counties near the Canadian border. But then last year we started writing on a new Farm Bill. We realized we had to broaden the boundaries. I also knew that we're going to have to put a lot more money in, and we secured $25 million for it, which is a rather substantial increase from where it is.
While Leahy's focus is on his home state, Brady notes the expansion includes additional counties in New York and New Hampshire.
It didn't expand to all of New Hampshire. There's an additional county or two additional counties in New Hampshire and multiple additional counties in New York. Vermont is the only statewide Northern Border Regional Commission territory.
Northern Border Regional Commission Federal Co-Chair Harold Parker says qualifications for the program vary.
It depends on the county. There are the economically distressed, as we qualify it, which is a 80-20 federal versus local match. There are the transitional counties, which is 50-50, I believe. And then there is the attainment counties. It's a type of county that you may have a really distressed area in one section of the county, not so bad in the other, so it's based on more of the local economic stats in those counties. The overall qualifications haven't changed. It's just basically the territory expanded.
An additional $7 million has also been allocated through the commission for the Regional Forest Economy Partnership. Brady says the money will be used to address the decline in the forest economy industry across the region.
This is something we see from far western New York to far northeastern Maine. Our forest economy is changing. There are less people working in the woods. We've had paper mills close. We need to address that. And the senator put aside the $7 million to say, if you're a community that's impacted, if you're a company that is struggling to make it due to the change, we have a resource now to help you transition. Help a community transition. It could be that we're going to invest directly in wood products, but it could also be that that community needs broadband. Both of those are eligible activities under this separate $7 million.
Brady notes upcoming informational sessions are scheduled to assist potential applicants.
This is a big deal. We're going from only six counties of the state being eligible to every county in the state. Every town, every good idea in the state is now eligible for this federal grant money. Up to $500,000 for infrastructure.
Senator Leahy.
I want it to work. This is not just here's some federal money or here's some state money. Thank you very much. Goodbye. I wanted to make the community better, but I want to create jobs. We need jobs.
Applications will be available beginning March 8th on the commission's website. A link is at WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1909. Or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.